Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
The Chiefs beat the Giants? Barely. Stan Weber is here to break down what went right and what went wrong. Mostly, what went wrong. And with the Packers, Raiders, and Cowboys up next, are the Chiefs even in the discussion as one of the better teams in the National Football League? We'll get Stan's thoughts. Also, for the second week in a row, Stan Weber has watched Kansas State win a game and the opponent fire their coach. This has been happening for years. We'll find out what Stan thinks about some of the coaches that have fallen by the roadside after losing to Kansas State. And after Stan, a disturbing story by Breitbart News about my alma mater, Kansas State University. It now appears that Kansas State has taken $600,000 from Dr. Anthony Fauci and the NIH to do experiments on beagles with ticks that have led to the beagles being put down at about age 5 months. What a sick story. I've reached out to the school. I'll have more for you on this episode of KKHI. Brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Mike Robinson and his team just make it easy. Online at robertsrobinson.com or shop, click, drive, and set up that service appointment. They'll come get your car and service it for you and bring it back to you. robertsrobinson.com and Buick. Experience the new Buick. Stan Weber's here. Let's talk some football on KKHI. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Buck Roofing presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
What's better than talking football with Stan Weber? Now, the topic, the Chiefs, is not always going to be pretty here over the next few minutes. We got a lot to go over with Stan today after a big weekend of football is capped off by the Chiefs getting to 4-4 by barely beating the New York Football Giants. Good morning, Stan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. It's a good weekend of football. Really enjoyed it. It was fun to have the Chiefs play on Monday Night Football and have something to look forward to end of the week. So really cool and just a lot of fun. Can't wait for the season to continue on. I'm just only sad that the season's going by so fast. I'm enjoying it so much. And I can't believe we're past the halfway mark and high school football is almost done. Are you kidding me? I don't want to be negative. I want to be positive today. It's so much fun watching football unfold. It's been a great year.
You have over 3 months of football left. We're going to be okay. We've got this going for us. So I'm tired of saying, and you've heard me say this a million times through the years, and I'm not going to say it anymore with the Chiefs. I'm tired of saying you never apologize for winning in the NFL. I'm sorry. I'm apologizing for the Chiefs' dreadful performance Monday night against the Giants. They did win. They got the 4-4. But they're not making any progress. What do you make of what we saw Monday night?
Well, the struggles are real. There's no doubt about that. Like you mentioned, you've got to talk about where they really are and therefore what their prospects are of causing damage the rest of the way, making the playoffs. I think that everybody's opinion from positive and finding good things to negative and really being down on the Chiefs right now, all of them carry a little bit of credibility. And so it's just a matter of where you're going to focus it and how is it all going to play out. You know, what your goals and objectives are. If you're wanting to be the AFC's first-ranked team in the playoffs and get a bye throughout the playoffs, that's where they started, right? Most Chiefs fans would say that was what we're expecting. If that's your goal, then you know it's completely out of range. If you're saying, hey, I want to make the playoffs, and I think we can be a factor, those that say, I want to win the division, there's still a path to do that, those kind of things, you could think that way as well. But you know, right now there are a lot of issues, Kevin. A lot of things that are not functioning well, you know, mainly just the discipline, the precision that we think is important to winning at the highest level. I mean, just think of Bill Belichick, right? I mean, he's the poster boy for NFL coaching and modern coaching of how you get it done. You look at that New England roster and you look at how they played against the Chargers, for instance, you know, they just don't have the talent level. It's anywhere near what the Chiefs and many other teams are, but they're about doing everything right. We know that model works, Kevin, but that's not necessarily the model that very many people can apply right now. You know, Vince Lombardi and that mentality of working your guys hard just really isn't available in modern football. They don't put pads on very much. They get their feelings hurt, all these things. So there are different ways to get it done, but the way we know works is being disciplined and doing the right things, and the Chiefs just don't do that. That is not part of their DNA. you talked about it, and I totally agree with you. If you go back to this whole run the Chiefs have had since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback, it hasn't been about discipline and perfect precision. It's just been about overwhelming people with unbelievable highlight reel type plays. And you take those out and you say, that's not part of your DNA, then the other things get exposed. You can't overcome the mistakes. I mean, again, double-digit penalties for the Chiefs. You know, mistakes all over the place. Turnovers, again, a big factor. Those are the feature things that you're talking about that they have not gotten rid of, and they're not having the spectacular plays. But at the end of the day, I think that one of the giant things that's occurred is there is a blueprint, a formula that the opponent believes in is going to work. Belief is a big thing when you're playing team sports. And the opponents, this time the Giants, are the perfect example, like a perfect experiment. They believe they had a formula that would give them a chance to beat the Chiefs. It wasn't a big chance, but it was a chance. And they never deviated from it, right? Right down to the end of the game, even when they were down and the Chiefs were driving the football, maybe to go up by two scores and put this thing away, they just stuck with it and said, this formula is going to work. Then the second stage of this that's very important is, I think the Chiefs have doubts. They don't think that it's just a cute little example of one way of playing that Tampa Bay was able to execute in the Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs are looking around going, this formula works as well. And they've created doubt on the offensive side of the Chiefs. And that's just a bad formula right now, and that's why the results just aren't good.
Well, there were a couple of big opportunities in the game, again, that the Chiefs, such a team known for so many big plays, just isn't making any big plays. And it's on both sides of the ball. I really thought there were a couple of things strategically in this game that could have changed it. The first, I don't think Andy Reid's doing the team any favors in a lot of ways. We'll get into that. But with about 2:12 left in the first half, the Chiefs are up four. They get a first down just short of midfield. The Giants get the ball at the start of the third quarter. The Chiefs got it to start the game. They drove down to the end zone and turned the ball over, but this is exactly what you play for. If you can get either the extra possession in the first half or win the coin toss and get it in the second half and hold the ball at the end of the half, we understand that's like getting a turnover in the game. The Chiefs have the ball with 2:12 to go. The clock is moving. They've got a first down, almost midfield. They drop back, they throw incomplete. They drop back, they throw incomplete. And they can't even get it to the two-minute warning. Then they do. Then the clock runs on a play. The Giants wind up getting the ball back with a chance to move down and score. Now, they didn't, but these are the things to me that really drive me crazy and really matter. I was hollering, Jessica, we were watching the game with 2:12 left, run the ball, first and 10, I think they were at like the 44, 45-yard line. Run the ball, get to the two-minute warning, figure out what you want. And a reasonable strategy at that point would be, let's get a couple of first downs, kick a field goal, and go to the locker room up 7 instead of up 4.
You know, it's something interesting, Kevin, that you talk about, because there's a real philosophical question that everyone's got to ask themselves. Okay, we all want our cake and eat it too. We always want to adjust to every situation and be the smartest possible. And that's, I love that idea. But very few coaching staffs believe they can do that. They have a philosophy, and then they've got to decide, are we going to live with this philosophy even through some decisions that don't look like they're game ready at that immediate moment? Or do you try to adjust? Andy Reid, like you said, just is a coach that he wants the spectacular. He wants to throw the ball. He was the first coach that wanted to throw the ball. He wanted to score. He wants to gain control of the game on offense. He's an offensive coach. That's what he's so focused in on. And so do you play to protect your defense? Do you play to the strategy of the game? The New York Giants had a strategy that was just in bold letters. You saw times where they said when they got the ball at the end of the half, they weren't even worried about scoring. They say, we get the ball to start the third quarter. Let's go in a close game, and we're going to win this thing at the end somehow, some way, hope something happens. Well, the Chiefs need to decide, are they a football team that can't go out with a leading edge offense to just light things up and post 30 points every game and then let the other opponent have to deal with that issue and always try to score no matter what the situation? Or do they need to protect their defense? Do they need to be game aware in certain situations to play what's the best opportunity to win that game against that opponent? And that's a very tough question, because the Chiefs are not wired that way. And sometimes you got to be concerned about throwing a curveball to your players. Do you take away their confidence when you aren't going for it all the time? It's an interesting dilemma. I thought it was easy for the Giants, and this is something I want everyone to take into account. It was easy for the Giants to come in and play that type of game against the Chiefs. This has nothing to do with what the Chiefs are going to be in the future when they're playing other opponents. I know we'll get to the next opponents, Kevin, but it's going to be completely different because the Giants knew they were the underdog. They knew they had almost no chance to win, so they stuck with the formula that limited their opportunities right and left. They just wanted the clock to run. They just hoped the Chiefs would burn time when they went down the field. They hoped the Chiefs would turn over the football before they scored and see if they could get out of here stealing a win. It almost worked for them because it almost unfolded that way. But it's a tough decision for Andy Reid because right now he has built a team that's gone to the AFC Championship three years in a row. He's gone to the Super Bowl twice and won. We know that whole thing, Kevin, but they've done it with being completely aggressive on the offensive side. That's what they do. And we can chronicle it for the fans every week, but we don't need to. The Chiefs aren't always in the lead. They have some crap that shows up in games, even in that playoff run in 2019, and they always believe they're going to overcome it with the magic of their offense, the magic of Patrick Mahomes. But a big issue, Kevin, to kind of transition is Patrick Mahomes is not the same guy.
Right.
Okay, he is not the Patrick Mahomes of last year or the year before. He has got doubt flowing through his head right now.
Yeah, he definitely does. He's lost his confidence. He's lost his mojo, whatever that may be. And we've seen on several occasions, and we saw this last night, they showed the wide shot of the field, and at the snap of the ball, seven defenders for the Giants are going backwards. They're literally starting the play by going backwards. It seems to me, if you know that's what defenses are going to do to you, I know it's short passing, you ought to be able to design an offense that just carves that up. How come they can't do that?
Well, it goes back to, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is the same quarterback he was. Now, will he bounce out of it? I don't know. But, Kevin, when you're back in the pocket, there's two things that you can view. You can view all the green grass that's out there. I mean, when you have the arm strength of Patrick Mahomes, you literally can look 50 yards downfield, and you got 53 yards wide. There is a lot of grass out there with not that many defenders. And when you have that positive viewpoint in the passing game, it's pretty cool. The other viewpoint you can have is, oh, my gosh, there's a lot of defenders, and they're fast. And at the line of scrimmage, there are dudes who raise their arms out. Length is unbelievable, the timeout and tip passes. I don't think Patrick Mahomes, during his starting period of time, through probably the end of last year, ever thought about arms flying up at the line of scrimmage. He never worried about the rushers or the linebackers. He would throw right through them like they were just a video game and not real people. He never worried about balls getting tipped or anything else. His angles that he threw out and everything else. Defenders in the way, he would just fire the ball, and it always turned out good. The ball would bounce off a defender if they accidentally did have a chance to intercept it. But most of the time, it would make it through. How many times, Kevin, this year, has a guy at the line of scrimmage when he's running an RPO? That's an unblocked guy. He's designed to be unblocked. He's 6'4" with a giant wingspan, and he's right in front of you. How do you possibly throw the ball through him, over him, around him to a Tyreek Hill on the run to make a great play? I say the question with, I don't know the answer, Kevin, but Patrick Mahomes did it for 3 years and acted like that defender wasn't there. Guess what's happening this year? The guys are knocking the balls down. Sometimes they're knocking them up in the air and getting interceptions. And I think Patrick Mahomes is now seeing those guys.
Yeah.
They were invisible, and he saw the grass behind him. But now he's seeing the linebackers. He's seeing the danger. And when you do that, you have a couple of choices. You can control your game like Alex Smith and say, I'm not going to turn over the football. That's my number one goal. Or you can lose some of your effectiveness. How do you beat what the Giants were doing? Just look at the easy curl route. You just run a curl route against cover two, Kevin. Have a guy out in the flat who's open. You could dump the ball at the line of scrimmage, which the Chiefs do, okay? Or you can run a curl route 12 yards and then see what that guy does after catching. He might even go further. But the Chiefs aren't able to stick the ball and complete that 12-yard curl route and just take candy from babies. It should be very easy. But go back and watch the tape, Kevin. Patrick Mahomes' arm whip, the whip of his arm is slowed down, in my opinion. He is looking and seeing the danger while he's throwing. How many of those passes are softly falling incomplete? Do you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the time that he tried to throw the ball down the left sideline and it kind of dangerously just dropped in the field after a soft throw and it looked like Travis Kelce might get to it? You know, he's a few yards behind it. He is just seems like he's hoping the ball gets there. And they're really working with it. you can see it. He's not dropping back and just killing him in the passing game and the underneath routes. He's not firing the football and getting the ball in their hands where they can run after catch. They're doing a ton of things like basically handoffs. Him just popping the ball 1 yard forward, and they call that a pass, as McCole Hardman goes screaming around the outside. You know, a lot of his pass yards were just those little tight plays.
Yeah.
Now, I have no problem with the Chiefs offense doing that. I have no criticism of that. But one of the reasons why they're doing that is not only because of the cover two, but Patrick's not dealing back there. I thought he looked more comfortable in the pocket. I don't think that this outside tackle gave up things against the Giants like I've been talking about. Remember, I keep saying that. I don't think Patrick Mahomes believes in his pass rush. He's wanting to move up in the pocket because they're flying around his backside. I didn't see that as a problem last night, and maybe that's encouraging, but I think it's more about the Giants' lack of pass rush. But he looked more comfortable in the pocket, not just scooting out of there and running for no reason. But I don't see any period of that game where he looked like, take the snap, know I got the curl route at 12 yards, stick it on him with a fiery throw with complete confidence. It looked like, to me, he was tentative. Like, his brain is thinking about 10 things at once while he's throwing the football. And that only happens, Kevin, when you see the danger.
Yeah.
When you don't see the danger, you rip it. And that spiral comes flying out so fast, and you just split the numbers of the guy who curls. You know, even as Byron Pringle, bang, hits him in the chest, and suddenly the defenders are 2 or 3 yards away. He might be able to make a move because it is such a great pass with velocity. I don't think that's there. He's got doubt running through his mind all over the place, starting with not believing in his offensive line and not wanting to just stick in the pocket and throw, and now seeing those hands fly up. It is awful when you're in a pocket and you realize the guy who's rushing toward you might not even let you throw the ball. It's like you're in a hole. Does that make sense?
Yes.
If you're a bad passing quarterback, it feels like you're in a hole. These 6'5" guys coming toward you and your offensive lineman battling is just the most distracting thing in the world, Kevin. You just see this battle going on, and they're taking away your picture, and you can't see the linebacker, and you can't see the safety. You know, even if you're 6'3", you just can't see, and then you're supposed to rip a pass because of what you think you see out there. That's bad passers. Okay?
Well,
passers, pal, just can see the field and say, I'm not even worried about someone tipping a ball. He now is seeing the danger that's out there, and that is affecting his confidence and also, I think, his arm width. I do not think he's ripping the ball with confidence. He's so often just tossing the ball softly and kind of hoping something happens good.
Well, this sounds like an insult, and I don't mean it that way. I've said this as a statement, as a fact. You know, what we're seeing is the reason 11 teams passed on him in the draft. I mean, we've all sat here for 3 years and gone, how in the world did all these teams pass on Patrick Mahomes? Well, this is why. There was a lot of this in college. There was some doubt in his head in some games. He never won any big games. He never beat a team in the Big 12 with a winning record, so he didn't have that. That didn't seem to exist here. That seemed like, okay, he's with the Chiefs, he's got this talent around him, he's got this coach, it's all just so easy and everything is great. I think you've absolutely nailed it, Stan, which is why we have you on. This is like a golfer that can't make a 4-foot putt. I mean, it's mental as much as anything else right now. You could see it in his eyes. You know, we use the old cliche, deer in the headlight. They showed close-ups of him last night where he looked like he didn't want to be there. Peyton Manning's reactions on the Manning cast were like, oh my God, what is this guy doing? Manning scratching his head, watching him play football. Like, I kept telling Jessica, this boy needs some Peyton Manning in his life. He needs to spend a little time with Peyton Manning about how to play the position of quarterback because he's lost his mojo, just as you've said. But the question is, and you'd know better than anyone, I don't know, how do you get this back in the middle of a season?
Well, my answer is it's very unlikely. I don't think Patrick Mahomes' career is leveling off. This isn't the end. You know, it wasn't a great run. And, you know, then suddenly someone tells him that there's no Santa Claus. You know, it's not like that and it's all over. But I don't think you fix it in the middle of the season, Kevin. I think it's going to take an off season of training, resetting, getting a new team. Every year is a new year. Start at training camp. There's just something great about football. You can't just hit the go button, the booster, you know, and take off. That just doesn't happen. Things got to sequence out the right way. I think he'll learn from it. You know, it's really so awful for many Chiefs fans to hear this, but I'm just going to say it because I know you really like Alex Smith. You know, if Alex Smith took over as the Chiefs quarterback right now, the Chiefs would win 4 of their next 5 games.
They'd be a better team, wouldn't they?
They just would.
Yeah, they would.
They just would. The turnovers would go away.
Well, assuming the defenses play them the same way.
Doing the little thing.
Right? the opponent's defenses would have to play them the same way.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that, you know, the Chiefs are being played a certain way
right.
with Patrick Mahomes as the quarterback. Because, you know, the thing is that if Alex Smith was the quarterback, they wouldn't be playing the two shell,
right.
and then the Chiefs would be hitting Tyreek Hill over the top one. Because if you go back to Alex Smith's last year as a starting quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, he put one of the greatest passing performances together, and I'm talking about deep throws. He looked like he was Patrick Mahomes when you go back and look at how many deep shots they had and everything else. But he knew, you know, he learned from Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes learned from Alex Smith. But the further that you get away from that dynamic, the more pressure there is. Patrick Mahomes just needs to hit the reset button, find out that balance of, you know, Alex Smith did have something smart in his brain. You know, he looked like he was too conservative to Chiefs fans, but Alex Smith really knew how to win NFL games.
Yeah, he did.
Patrick Mahomes need to evaluate, you know, how much is my great play because I'm dynamic? How much is it Brett Favre? And how much should I just be Alex Smith? And where's my balance? He can't be either person. He's got to be himself. But where does he want to fit in to take his career to the next level? John Elway had to reinvent himself as his athleticism waned, right? But John Elway was as good a quarterback at the end when he won two Super Bowls as he was earlier in his career. He just did it in a different way. He matured. He grew. He became more reliable in the pocket, more, you know, basic passing schemes and cutting teams apart. And all those things need to happen. And Patrick Mahomes needs to do that as well.
Right.
I think he'll do it. But right now, it's really hard for him.
Okay.
He just doesn't look comfortable back there.
Agreed.
Right now. This is like your golfing example is great. I don't know if 4 foot's long enough, but let's say a 6 foot putt for a pro. Okay. What's the best way to make a 6 foot putt? Here I'm acting like I know. I'm going to ask you this, Kevin, like I know. The best thing is to put some pace on the shot, to hit it to the back of the cup with belief and take some of the curves out of it, to softly respect it so much and to hit it lightly to try to take every little blade of grass and movement and hope it drops in the hole. That's not how pros make those putts. You know, that's why they're better than us, because we make it a really curvy, hard putt with hope. They just blast the ball through and say, I'm going to make this. And I see a little, all I do is hit it 1 inch to the left with velocity. If I miss it 15 feet by, it doesn't. It goes to the back of the cup. That's how Patrick Mahomes is playing football. He was firing the ball. And right now, in that putting example, he's tapping it.
Yeah.
And just hoping that something bad, I'm not going to hit it 15 feet by. I can't hit it 15 feet by. You know, the great putters in the world, like Tom Watson, they never thought about the putt coming back because they knew they were going to make it.
Right.
You know, we were saying, oh, man, I can't blast it past the hole because I might miss it coming back. You see that in Patrick Mahomes' play? Even some of the completions out to the side where he jumped in the air and threw a soft pass to the running back to the outside, does that look like anything close to a guy who's stealing?
No.
Sticking the ball on people? I'd say no.
And my final question for you, and this, I can't even believe I'm asking this. I'm serious. You're going to be embarrassed by this question, but I got to ask it. I can't believe I'm asking you this. Should Andy Reid be considering a running game for Patrick Mahomes? Should they start running some RPOs and get him moving around and make him run the ball 5, 6, 7 times a game like the Giants do with Daniel Jones, or not Lamar Jackson-like, but if they added that, it will work. There's no doubt he's going to get big gains with the way they're played defensively. It's a big risk of getting your quarterback hurt. Should Andy Reid consider that, considering how defenses attack the Chiefs?
I think that's an area that I think I would be very careful about. I mean, he is way too valuable. You do not need to get him beat up. There's other ways to get things done. I'm okay with the RPO concept. Remember, when they won the Super Bowl, they came out, I think it was the first game against the Chargers, with an RPO, and Tyreek Hill got a short pass, ran through from right to left through the Chargers and way down the field. You know, the RPO game is fine, but I don't think you need to run Patrick Mahomes. No quarterback run games, quarterback draws. You do not need to get into that, I don't think. So but there are different formulas for the Chiefs. I like the fact, I'm not going to cut down Patrick Mahomes and say all his passing yardage came from down the line throws and behind the line throws. That's fine. That's good ways to get the ball to Mecole Hardman. I like the fact that they got the ball with Tyreek Hill. It wasn't as if Tyreek Hill was asleep. It took what was underneath. The thing that has to be cleaned up, the number one thing that I think can be cleaned up to make the Chiefs season turn around and still be a factor is cut out the turnovers. I'm not positive at all or enthusiastic about them cutting out the penalties. I just think that's in their DNA. They're sloppy. They do those kind of things. But I do think the Chiefs can cut out the turnovers. There's no reason that they should fumble the ball once in a while. That can be taken out of the game. Some of that's luck. And I think the Chiefs, without turnovers, beat the Giants by 17 points, and it's an easy game going away. And another big thing, Kevin, because I do see some optimism going forward, it is way better to not be playing on your heels, nervous that everyone's coming after you, that they have a formula to beat you. They're the underdog. You're the team that played in the Super Bowl. That's what we've seen week after week. The Chiefs have had to take the year saying, we're the best team in the NFL. Forget all that. Forget all that for a second. How about the Chiefs legitimately saying the opponent doesn't respect us and the opponent believes they're better than us in 2021, and now we're somewhat of the underdog? That's the optimistic thing that's coming up. This is what I like. People are saying Green Bay is going to beat Kansas City. People say Dallas is going to beat Kansas City. And then with the Raiders, they'll lean with the Raiders being at home.
Oh,
they
yeah.
think the Raiders are going to beat the Chiefs.
Of course.
I like this. I think the Chiefs can now let it fly. They can finally, with a straight face, just go play a game as an underdog and say, we don't have to protect ourselves and be the better team. We now can go out and play. There's room to lose. If the Chiefs lose to the Packers, who's going to say, I can't believe it? Who's going to say, I'm so surprised? That actually is a breath of fresh air to the Kansas City Chiefs. I think in the next three games, we're going to be able to see the Chiefs play a little more loose and free, and that will show a better version of the Chiefs.
KKHI is brought to you by 360 Document Solutions, online at 360documentsolutions.com. Mark Lindquist and his team can make your office more efficient with copiers, printers, IT solutions, mailing systems, phone systems. For a free estimate of what they can do for you, just contact 360documentsolutions.com at 913-745-5344. Stan, let's talk a little college football. You were able to watch Kansas State win for the second week in a row, and then the opponent fire its coach. You go way back with Gary Patterson. You guys were teammates at Kansas State. He is, I think he's probably a Hall of Fame coach, and was the second longest tenured coach in America, but all good things must come to an end. And for Gary Patterson, it was a dominant win by Kansas State and a loss in Manhattan on Saturday.
Yes, and it's just so interesting that we're seeing this unfold in college football right in our face, because like you just said, seeing it happen right with K-State's schedule and seeing two coaches, and there's others who basically been let go during the season, you know, it really makes me ask those people who are involved with that at those universities. I'm not going to throw all of college athletics underneath the bus yet. You can do that if you want. But in those specific examples at those schools, the fact that they're basically getting rid of their coaches during the year means that this idea that they're there for student athletes and their health and welfare and trying to get these young men to be grown men and give them opportunities for education and asking them to be a part of a team and a group and a university and a family and all these things, it's just a joke when you let go of your coach during the year. It becomes everything but that. It's about the money, what the big boosters are saying, what pressure points you get with social media, you know, how disappointed you are, how non-committed you are. If you can't even let your whole university system and your athletic department push together for one full year together, then really this is all a joke when they talk about those other things. And that's what I see, because look at Matt Wells. He was 5-2, Kevin. He was 5-2 when they played K-State. So now they're 5-3, and they let him go. Ed Ogeron at LSU, mid-year. I mean, how you don't wait to evaluate at the end of the year, and you don't stick with someone and let these kids learn about perseverance and togetherness and to blow up their world and just have all these changes, it's a complete joke. It's not what they say they're in for college athletics. So maybe it's just a big business and all those things that people want to talk about from the negative side. At those universities where they're doing it, we're seeing that. Now, for Gary Patterson, like you said, maybe a Hall of Fame career, pretty amazing. He's made them so many millions of dollars, they wouldn't even be close to the Big 12 right now. He wasn't good at football when all that came down, right, around 2011. If TCU wasn't good at football, they would be SMU. And SMU's just in a minor conference, hardly getting any money, while TCU's getting tons of money, tons of exposure and prestige. K-State, they played good football. And what we said after the Texas Tech game, Kevin, was they just needed something positive to happen. They had forgotten what winning felt like, that kind of belief in each other that things are going to work. We have a good offensive system. We play good defense. Those things all come in question when you don't win. And it doesn't matter who you play in your schedule. You can play the hardest teams in the country, but it just doesn't matter. You need to win. And K-State won barely by 1 point. But after that, when they left that locker room, Kevin, that whole team just took a deep breath and said, we're good. And they showed it all week long. The work together, the belief in each other, the K-State football team believes in Skylar Thompson. They believe in their coaching staff and Chris Kleiman. They were a very confident bunch going into what I thought was a toss-up game with TCU. TCU's offense is so explosive. A big-time running back, a good passing game. The defense has been leaking oil, very surprising, first time ever in Gary Patterson's career. And you thought, okay, can K-State play in a shootout situation? Well, K-State played great defense. They didn't make mistakes. They had shut out Texas Tech for the second half, Kevin. And you add that into what happened to this game. They basically scored a touchdown in the last seconds of the game against the backups. They almost have gone six quarters without giving a touchdown. It was a very solid effort on defense. The offense under Skylar Thompson is doing everything right. K-State, surprisingly, has grown into a better passing team than running team, Kevin. I didn't think I'd say that, but credit the offense, the whole group, the offensive lines, pass blocking well. Skylar Thompson's just dealing out there, and the receiving core and the guys who are catching the football are doing a lot better than most people thought. The defense, if they can play like this, can give you hope, but they are led, obviously, by one guy who has gone crazy the last 2 weeks. Felix Anudike Uzama has been a critical factor. That Texas Tech game, K-State was in trouble, down by 14, and he made one of the most unusual plays I've ever seen. Texas Tech snapping the ball from the 4. Not the half-yard line, Kevin, the 4. And they snap it back, hand it off to the running back, and somehow he undercuts the tackle. The tackle is on his back or on his side holding him. He carries him over, engulfs the running back so he can't get the ball out of the end zone. Safety K-State, here we go. An incredible play on already an incredible year. Felix had 6 sacks going into the game this week against TCU. That's a good season. He had that safety. It was a critical play. He's been solid down after down. You say, wow, this guy's doing pretty well. And then he goes off the charts with, you know, I said on the air, Kevin, it may be the greatest one-game defensive performance in K-State history. He had 8 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, and tied the K-State record with 4 sacks in a game. But it easily could have been more. It could have been 6 sacks. He's a National Defensive Player of the Year. But like I said, I don't want to be disrespectful to Gary Spaney, who'd go out and make 20 tackles, and Terrence Newman and Chris Canty and Jamie Mendez. I'm trying to think of the other games, Kevin. Chris Johnson, 4 sacks against Missouri at Mizzou in 2000. There have been other performances, but I do believe this is right in there. It could be the best one-day defensive performance in K-State history.
Well, and I said on the podcast yesterday, it's the greatest one-day pass rushing performance in college football history because they took 2 sacks away from him because he stripped the ball. And I'm like, well, I'd rather strip the ball than get the sack. So in the NFL, this is 6 sacks and 2 forced fumbles, which is better than 6 sacks, which he tied the national record. They took 2 away. You know me, Stan. I'm that guy. I think they took him away because he plays for K-State and they don't want him in the record books. I don't know. But I think you can make a really strong argument. It was the greatest pass rushing performance in college football history by one player, and K-State fans got to see it on Saturday. What can you tell me about this young guy? He's from Lee's Summit. He was not a big-time recruit. He was in some services 2 stars, but others 3. He's clearly blossomed at Kansas State. He's grown. He's gotten in the weight room. And this is not a perfect comparison in any way, okay? But he reminds me, his ability to kind of get skinny and get around guys reminds me a little bit of Derek Thomas. And he doesn't play linebacker, so it's not the perfect comparison. But I see the moves, and I see the way he gets to where he's going. And I'll be darned if it doesn't remind me a little bit of Derek Thomas. Is that crazy?
Well, it's always got to be a little crazy when you mention his name. But, you know, the thing is, he's strong enough. I talked about that safety. He was carrying a guy holding him 4 yards in a flash. That shows the strength and balance. He's a lean, looking NFL type fast defensive end that can move like an Eric Thomas. So there is some advantages to having that speed type of body, but then can you handle the rigor of, you know, being strong and right. being coordinated and being on balance? And he's done all those things. I'm telling you, like you said, first of all, two forced fumbles that were recovered by K-State. Not just two forced fumbles.
Right.
Two turnovers.
Yes.
Of course. And if you tackle a guy 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, you knock the ball away, that should be a sack no matter where the ball goes. But the NCAA rule is if the ball falls forward and goes across the line of scrimmage before K-State recovers it, they consider that a run. So not where you hit him and made him fumble, but where the ball went. If the ball would have bounced 2 yards further back against TCU and the catch jumped on it, it would have been called a sack. So that's kind of the quirk we're talking about here. But he had 8 tackles. He's playing against the run. He's consistently playing week after week. You know, these sack totals sometimes can be, hey, I got 3 this game. He did have a game of 3 already this year, Kevin, which is the 4th best performance in K-State history. So he's had a 3-sack game and a 4-sack game, and he's had many 1-sack games. He's doing it in a 3-man front where you have your 3 linebackers stacked. It's not even a 4-man front. So they can always try to get angles and double-team you. There's nothing easy. There's no advantageous situation. He's not an extra stand-up blitzing type of guy, Kevin, who's causing havoc. Derek Thomas kind of got to do that once in a while. But he is just down after down having to play against right. the run, battle 1 or 2 guys, and make plays, and he's done that. Now, what do you know about him? He's the kind of kid that K-State has made its reputation by. He's the kind of kid. He had no Division I offers at the FBS level. 0. He was going to go to North Dakota State. But when Chris Klieman changed and went to K-State, he jumped and came to K-State with Chris Klieman's recruiting efforts. So here's a kid from Kansas City. You listen to him talk, very smart, hardworking, humble, not told that he's great, you know, not 4 stars and those type of things by the recruiting services. Just works and works and tries to get better. And guess what? He's turning into a star. He's turning into a guy who's looks like an NFL player. All those things, you know, kind of like you've seen with Jordy Nelson or Darren Sproles or whoever you want to fill in who have all the talent in the world and has always had it, but people just overlooked it. But the best thing they had is they're smart and they're hard workers. So it's great to see this kid from Kansas City play this way all year, Kevin. He has played great all year long. And that's the most exciting thing is not, hey, you put one game together that we'll talk about for a long, long time. It's that he's doing it week after week. That's safety. Against Texas Tech was a better play than any of the ones he had against TCU, and he dominated against TCU. So,
no doubt, that is no question. And a lot of offensive players, Deuce Vaughn, a lot of people at K-State can make some nice plays this year. That was the biggest single play of the K-State season. It changed their season.
Yeah, their back was to the wall, and they would have lost that game. I probably would have lost to TCU as well.
Exactly.
And they would be on a big-time loser streak. Kevin, I got to tell you one thing because I did not tell you this last week. You weren't on the podcast last week, okay?
Right.
Remember, Spencer and I spoke, but Spencer probably wouldn't have taken this into account as well as you, and I didn't know it. So let's be truthful. I didn't know it at that point. I was doing my study last week, Kevin, and I just realized I'm tracking something that is K-State's record since 1989. Why do I track some of these things? Hey, Kevin, I don't know. It's just part of the routine during the week. I never expect to ever talk about it, but these are things that – integrate into my mind, okay? So Bill Snyder became the head coach in 1989. I had done 22 games for the Wildcats before that under Stan Parrish, okay? 1987 and 88 season, K-State had 1 tie in there with KU and no wins in those 22 games. Here comes Bill Snyder in 1989. So here's what's significant. I'm working on my stuff last week, and I realized, oh, wait a second. K-State, since Bill Snyder got here in 1989, has played exactly 400 games. So I don't know why that meant something to me, but I just go, wow, that is a nice marker. 400 games. Now, Ron Prince has been the coach for 3 years, and Chris Klieman is in his 3rd year. So it's not just a Bill Snyder stat. Since Bill Snyder changed K-State football in 1989, including the building years or any down years, Kevin, I realized that in those 400 games, K-State has won 62.5% of their games. They have averaged 7.5 wins over those 33 years. 7.5. And then I realized it's the 25th best record in college football in a winning percentage since 1989. So what Bill Snyder did, even through the tough years and the ups and downs, a 33-year window, Kevin, 400 games. Wow. Who wouldn't take 7.5 wins a year? Okay, Oklahoma, maybe Alabama, whatever. That is amazing. So thank you to Bill Snyder. And that meant with 22 games before that and one since that 400 mark, I've now done, I can do this math, 423 games, Kevin, straight for K-State. Man, it's been an honor to do it. And Bill Snyder turned things around in 1989. I feel very fine investing those first 2 years to get all the joy of 7.5 wins on average all 33 years.
Wow, that is amazing. You are something else, Stan. I've run out of superlatives, not just the way you break down football, but obviously your legacy and commitment to Kansas State and such a – you're just such an outstanding analyst. I can't thank you enough for sharing time with us. I know you're a busy guy, and I tease you, you got a big boy job. You really have a big boy job, but you make it work, man, and it's just a thrill for me to talk football with you. I really appreciate it. Wish you a great week, and we got KU K-State coming up on Saturday. I know you and I will chat before then. We'll talk about that one. How's that sound?
That sounds great, Kevin. Good to have you back. It was great to talk to Spencer. Great to see your family growing up and doing these exciting things. And thanks for all the listeners out there who listen to KK Has Issues, man. It's great to hear Kevin's voice, and it's always fun that you allow me to talk to you, Kevin. It's fun to talk football or whatever with you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Stan. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks, Kevin.
All right, bye-bye. There's Stan Weber. Wow, 423 consecutive games called at Kansas State. And you'd be hard. It's almost, if there wasn't the Snyder family, it's almost the first family of K-State football, really, or K-State athletics. His whole family goes there. They're all honor students. They're becoming coaches. They play. They walk on. Then they get scholarships. Stan was the quarterback. He's done 423 games. He's a broadcaster. He's amazing. Stan Weber is truly one of a kind, the one and only. KKHI is brought to you by Merriam Body Shop, just off I-35 and Johnson Drive in Merriam. Online at merriambodyshop.com. They're State Farm preferred, but they'll work with your insurance company no matter what for full collision repair or things as small as paintless dent removal. You got some door dings from grocery buggies or something you want to get rid of, they'll do the small jobs. They want to be basically like the Quick Trip or the Chick-fil-A of the collision repair business. They want to make sure that this is the best customer experience you could get anywhere. It's a new level of service at Merriam Body Shop, the local guys, your local conservatives fixing up your cars. Also, the new car image and complete custom detailing all in one place. Just call Justin, 913-362-1198 for any repairs with your body or the look of your car at Merriam Body Shop, online at merriambodyshop.com. Fry Orthodontics with 12 locations in Kansas City. Your first appointment is free. They are always on time. This is an efficiently run orthodontic practice. They will get you the perfect smile for a lower price and less time. Free retainers for life. Invisalign, the same price as braces. Fewer appointments, less time missed, less painful, better hygiene. And you're on time at Fry Ortho, where your smile is just the start. And bstock.net, where November, the entire month of November, it's Black Friday. All of November is Black Friday at bstock.net. The warehouse is in Olathe, 14680 South Flaming Road. Samsung 65-inch, $450. It's the most popular TV they sell. It's the perfect size. It's somewhere between little and big. It fits in most places. It has an incredible picture, just $450. The 70-inch Samsung TU7000, just $499. You want that 70-inch, it's only $49 more. Wow, that is incredible. It is Black Friday all November at bstock.net in Olathe. Well, you ever have something happen to you that you either learn some bad news or you see something or maybe something happened in your family or with your kid? Or, you know, I always still have these dreams where, you know, I'm late for class or something in college, or I didn't get an assignment done, and my parents are really disappointed in me because I got a bad grade or whatever. And you have this, I guess the best way to describe it is this sinking feeling, but this was more than that. This was hurt. I had genuine hurt yesterday and started to kind of sweat sitting right here in my office, in my podcast room, as I was going over 4 days worth of emails that I didn't really get to respond to because we were moving. I was digging out. I've always called this digging out. If you miss a little time in this business, you're digging out. because everybody keeps emailing, everybody keeps calling. It's probably not unlike your business, but it's relentless. In my business, I'm it. There's nobody that can respond to these things. Nobody can handle it. I have to do it. So I'm pouring through all these emails, and I received a couple over the weekend of something I didn't see and hadn't heard about and don't know anybody in my circle of friends or anyone that knew this had happened. You can recall on previous podcasts at KKHI how sickened I've been by Dr. Anthony Fauci and the NIH for funding research that kills dogs. That they strap sand flies to their neck in plastic collars and let them, the flies just eat them to death with bacteria and disease. And then they put these puppies, beagle puppies. They go to breeders. What kind of breeder sells beagle puppies to universities? If you're selling them to university, they're killing the dogs. You're a breeder, for God's sake. I know dog people. Don't sell them to universities. It's Anthony Fauci. He's evil. He is absolutely the devil. I told you how heartbroken I was last year when I learned that my daughter had gone to the University of Georgia. She worked in science. She does research. She's currently doing COVID research at Children's Mercy Hospital. It is worthy, honorable, great work that she does. I remember her telling me when she was a senior in high school that she would like to be a veterinarian, but she doesn't think she could put animals down. We then learned at the University of Georgia they took money from Anthony Fauci and killed beagles in the name of I don't know what with sand flies. It was brought to my attention this weekend. There was a story on Saturday at Breitbart. Breitbart is an outstanding site. They do great work. It's a great conservative site. Dr. Anthony Fauci's division of the National Institutes of Health is funding an experiment at Kansas State University involving hundreds of ticks feasting on puppies injected with a mutant bacteria. They put this mutant bacteria in the dogs. They go by cuddly, sweet little beagle puppies because they're docile and they know it will not be difficult to handle these dogs. Beagles are the most docile dogs on earth. Some people think they're stupid. Whatever you want to think of beagles. I don't care what you think of beagles as a breed. They're docile. They are the sweetest dogs. We refer to them as stoner dogs. Our dog is half beagle, which is probably a good thing because full beagles are like total stoner dogs. We joke all the time that our dog is a stoner. He just likes to be, he walks around like he's just stoned, like he's just high. Hey, we love him that way. He's the sweetest little thing. According to Breitbart and the White Coat Waste Project, which is a group that is a watchdog of taxpayer funds, they have revealed documents through the Freedom of Information Act showing that the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, led by Fauci, gave $536,311 to Kansas State University this year, right now, this moment, this year. $536,000 to Kansas State to go out and buy 18 beagles, infect them with a mutant bacteria. And are you ready for this? The study has nothing to do with dogs. It's about what happens with ticks. Can the mutant bacteria go from a dog to a tick? That's what this is about. So then they take ticks and put them all over the dogs. They smother them with hundreds of ticks. Then they study the ticks after they kill the dogs to see if the ticks got the bacteria. I cannot tell you the hurt that I had. I immediately called the president's office at Kansas State University. General Richard Myers is the president at K-State. He's been on this podcast. If you go way back to the very first week in September of last year, you'll hear an unbelievable podcast with General Myers. He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He went to my high school, Shawnee Mission North. I know the general. I don't know him well. I've met him several times. He used to call into my radio show. I don't think he knows this was going on at Kansas State. They know now. I called his assistant that answered the phone. There was silence on the phone when I told her what I was calling about. I have not received a call back. I will call them again today, and I will call them every day until I find out what the hell's going on at K-State. I would encourage anyone that donates money to K-State, that has gone to K-State, that is a K-State fan, or anybody that loves animals, that loves dogs, to call the president's office at Kansas State. Call them. Call them and tell them you're outraged. Kansas State does not need this $536,000. Taxpayers of the state of Kansas fund this school. The Alumni Association is the largest in the Big 12. They have money everywhere. They're in big-time Division I athletics. For a school their size and their location and all that, it's millions and millions. K-State has enough. There's a building boom on campus. They're expanding. They're growing. It is a vibrant community. Manhattan is booming. They do not need money from Dr. Fauci to kill beagle puppies. Don't tell me this is about money and research. This is government waste. This is a joke. It is cruel. It is inhumane. And I am sickened today to tell you that I went to Kansas State University, and I've never felt that way. One day in my life, even after I graduated, and it was Silo Tech, and people made fun of you. When I went to K-State, people made fun of you for going there. It was a joke. We respect agriculture now. We have farm-to-table restaurants. Well, it was a joke then. Oh, you're going to school out where the farms are and all the farmers. And I was ag. Well, it's kind of cool now. Ag is cool. You know what isn't cool? Buying beagle puppies from breeders and torturing them in their short little puppy lives for a couple of weeks. You torture the living shit out of them, and then you put them down. These people are sick. Absolutely sick. And I'm sick that Kansas State is part of it. And I want them to call me back and tell me it isn't true, that they didn't take the money and they didn't do it. And if they did do it, I want to know which professors were involved. I want to know what head of what department took that money. I want to know who went out and bought the beagles and put them in cages and put ticks all over them. I want to know what kind of human being can do that. This is a veterinary school. You go to Kansas State to help animals, to help farmers, to keep horses alive, to keep livestock from getting sick. We've taken our drugs, we've driven them to Manhattan before for the great care and treatment they can get at the vet school. These are some of the brightest people in the world when it comes to keeping dogs healthy and keeping dogs alive. You will not find better dedication than Manhattan, Kansas. It's the identity of the school. We grow crops, we feed people, we keep animals alive. Animal health is everything. Our School of Veterinary Medicine is world-renowned. People come from all over the world to study at Kansas State Veterinary Medicine. And now you have research because Dr. Fauci gave you $500,000 where you're buying from a puppy mill or a breeder beagle puppies and putting ticks all over them for weeks, torturing them and going, okay, we can pull the ticks off now and study the ticks. Let's kill the dogs. You are sick people. Sick. And I'm sick. I never thought in a million years. I saw it happen at Georgia. I'm like, okay, I don't feel the same way about Georgia I do Kansas State. My daughter went there. I love Georgia. I root for them when they play football. It's all there. Georgia and Kansas State are mirror schools, by the way. This doesn't surprise me. They're identical. The campus is the same size. The curriculum is almost identical. It's agriculture. It's veterinary. It's the same. Football is everything. These schools are so much alike, it's scary. It's frightening. They're 90 minutes from a major metropolitan area. They're identical. There's so many similar things between Manhattan and Athens and the culture at Georgia and the culture at K-State and what they're about. They're almost identical, which was, I think, in a way, sort of how my daughter looked at a lot of schools. I think that's how she picked it. I think she got there and it kind of reminded her of that, but she didn't want to go to K-State. Her brothers did and her dad did and her mom did, and that was enough. And she was going to go somewhere else. And so she did. And I brush it off. I'm like, well, that's Georgia. Kansas State University is buying beagle puppies and killing them. I know some of you are not dog people, and you're listening to this thinking, he's unhinged, man. He's lost his mind. You come live one day with my half beagle dog, and you read these stories, and you look at these puppies in these cages. You come live one. You babysit my dog for one day. And you tell me how you feel about this. And it's not just the breed. It's not that my dog is part beagle. It's not. I wouldn't care what kind of dog this is. This is the sickest thing ever. These are the sweetest, cutest, cuddliest puppies ever. And they're just torturing them and killing them. And it has to stop at Kansas State, period. And if General Myers, the president of the university, didn't know, he needs to end it now. End this now, give the money back. This project can't be over. It's being funded this year at Kansas State. Give the money back. Stop killing dogs at Kansas State. You're a vet school, for God's sake. Stop. I hate to end it that way, but I'm done. Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.